beatific presence. Man is the idea of spirit. He reflects the beatific presence, illumining the universe with light. What is the beatific presence that Jesus lived and taught to his disciples? St. Matthew describes the scene. He went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them. Then Jesus delivered his sermon on what it means to be a child of God. We might call the first part of that sermon Jesus' song, his Beatitudes. He knew that these brief blessings describe both a nous consciousness, immediate knowledge, for the genuine Christian, and an incremental process of realization for mankind. Sooner or later, mortals must follow Jesus' sayings and his demonstrations, which dominate the flesh, for there is no other way out of the hell of mortal beliefs. Perfect and infinite mind enthroned is heaven. The evil beliefs which originate in mortals are hell. As an enlightened state of consciousness, the Beatitudes enumerate the continual attitude and activity of the Christly minded, those who acknowledge and obey one supreme infinite God. To the wandering mortal mind in search of redemption, the Beatitudes offer a series of lessons arranged as stepping stones to grace, the first being the foundational requirement of humility, followed by states and stages of spiritual preparation and practice. Each step receives the assurance that the mental preparation or task is both worthwhile and necessary, and that the reward is inevitable. Notice that the prophetic blessing for both the first and last Beatitudes is identical. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Resolution of the last challenge requires the mental attitude of the first, and vice versa. We cannot overcome persecution without absolute humility, and we cannot grow in grace without rejecting the lies of material sense. All the Beatitudes are interconnected as love's universal embrace of all creation. The lessons are cumulative, and the grace learned by each lesson must be maintained in order to progress to the next blessing. The first four Beatitudes are preparatory, identifying the mental framework of the Christ man. The next three are proactive, where success is realized by the fruit it bears in blessing one's neighbor. And the last one focuses on the trial that leads to resurrection, the loss of all material reliance, and the return of man's awareness of his heavenly home. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. When the material senses are of no help, when we turn away from mortal memories, when we know that we do not know, when we answer the Lord's call to come out from among them and be ye separate, then we have become helplessly humble. Finding ourselves still conscious after mortal mind's methods have been exhausted, we hope for something better than dreamland disappointments. Hopefulness is neither prejudiced nor opinionated. It merely waits for a solution that is not attributed to oneself. Hope disassociates man from mortal mind, foretelling the dawn of a higher faith. As we orient ourselves to the straight and narrow pathway through the valley of the shadow of death, we begin to remember heaven's hymn and walk forth with joy. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. After we get humble and discover that we are not separate from God, we look around at our meager accomplishments and realize that all the things of this world are vain, that not even our bodies or life itself belongs to us. We ask, why have we been so foolish and worked so hard for nothing but illusions? Giving up our pursuit of the pleasures of this world is a mournful occasion, but sorrow has its reward. It never leaves us where it found us. The furnace separates the gold from the dross, that the precious metal may be graven with the image of God. Forgetting the mistakes of the past and forsaking the expectation of future enchantments requires more than a passive desire for Christ. Sin and hypocrisy are addictions that continue to haunt us until the end of error. Yet, to escape from sin is what the Bible demands. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, says the apostle. And he straightway adds, for it is God which worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Meekness is not moved by nature's wrath or by mortal man's aggressive ego. Jesus expounded on meekness this way: resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Attempting to destroy error with error does not eliminate error, but merely binds the mistake to oneself. Are not we the beholder of the error in the first place? Meekness is the tool that breaks the cycle of vengeance and foretells the doom of all oppression. Mortal mind requires universal consent to continue its delusions. The meek do not participate, and therefore they are the ones who qualify for earth's stewardship. Let them have dominion over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Paul said, we must be instant, in season, out of season. Often, Jesus' disciples were too late or too dull to follow in his footsteps. In the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus saith unto Peter, Simon, sleepest thou? Couldest thou not watch 1 hour? Watch ye and pray, lest ye enter into temptation. The spirit truly is ready, but the flesh is weak. Dullness and the resulting hesitation always lead to disaster and prove one's lack of worthiness. Waking to Christ's demand, mortals experience suffering. This causes them, even as drowning men, to make vigorous efforts to save themselves. And through Christ's precious love, these efforts are crowned with success. Let your loins be girded about, and your lights burning, and ye yourselves like unto men that wait for their Lord, that when he cometh and knocketh, they may open unto him immediately. Christ is forever calling on us. Are we listening? Are we ready to respond? Blessed are those servants whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find watching. If we have been practicing the lessons of the preceding Beatitudes and living them, we realize that hope and faith have prepared us to share Christ, truth, to love our neighbor as Jesus did. Humility, repentance, meekness, and earnest desire are now present in consciousness, and we are ready to transform our tattered sense of earth to heavenly forms of grace. It is time to heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, and cast out demons. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Mercy is the natural effect of universal love, inspiring spiritualized man to share his bounty. When the Samaritan saw the man who had been robbed and wounded, he had compassion on him and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. Jesus said to the man that was born blind, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam." And he that was blind came, seeing. To the woman who was bowed together, he said, "Thou art loosed from thine infirmity." And she stood up straight. When Jesus went to the graveside of Lazarus, commanding that the stone be rolled away, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come forth." And he that was dead came forth. Merciful desire continues to coax us toward even greater works than these. Divine love is realized in proportion as it is magnified, and acts of mercy confirm man's ascent. Now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity.